Well, we have some great news this evening. If you haven't already heard, Jesus Garcia was baptized this afternoon into Christ. And so we are rejoicing with him. He's sitting right down here up front. So make sure you're able to speak with him afterwards. That's exciting. We're very happy for him. This evening, we are going to be talking about Joseph. When you think about the great characters in the Old Testament, and you think about who you'd want to make as a role model in the Old Testament, Joseph has to be up there near the top. When you think about the way that he withstood temptation, he was strong through all of that. When you think about the way he was mistreated, but instead of fighting back, he forgave. You see such a great role model in Joseph. But when we read that story, we usually put ourselves in Joseph's shoes and we think of how would I react in that situation and look at it through Joseph's perspective. Tonight, I want to look at the story of Joseph from a different angle. Tonight, rather than looking at it through Joseph's eyes, let's try looking at it through the eyes of the brothers. Tonight we're going to think about if we were in the brothers' shoes, what kind of thoughts would be going through our eyes, our minds? What would we be thinking about? How would we react to these different situations? And I think when we look at it from that perspective, there's a whole nother story that we're going to be able to see. And there's an important point that I want us to get from it. So let's begin this journey through the story of Joseph. We're going to be beginning in Genesis chapter 37, where the story of Joseph begins. And we're going to go through it thinking about how the brothers reacted, what they were thinking about. When you think about these brothers, the amount of jealousy that they would have to kill their own sibling, to desire to take his life, that's a lot of hatred. That's a lot of anger. So let's try to think about the things that brought about that anger. What is it that could have gotten them to that kind of point? Now, by looking at the chapters around this, we see that Joseph's brothers were not particularly nice people. There's several stories that just are shocking to read about the evil things that they did. But then to try to take their own brother's life, what kinds of things surrounded that action? One of the things would have to be the hatred and the envy that they had for him. In that, as that hatred and that envy grew over time, one of the things you see right off the bat in this chapter is in verse 2, it says, Joseph, when 17 years of age, was pasturing the flock with his brothers while he was still a youth, along with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wife. And Joseph brought back a bad report about them to their father. So right at the beginning, one of the things that causes a lot of anger in the brothers is this problem with Joseph bringing back a bad report. He makes them look bad. Joseph goes and he visits his brothers, and he comes back and he tells his father, look at what they're doing. And this idea of exposing them, showing who they are, that really starts to irritate them and bother them. And then this continues as another challenge that they had is their dad really liking Joseph. And you have the story of how he gives Joseph this beautiful coat. And he doesn't give that to the rest of the brothers. And so then there's this envy, this jealousy between the brothers and Joseph. Here, they want the attention, but Joseph's getting all the attention here. And so you have this family situation that's getting worse and worse. And then, to top it all off, you have the problem with Joseph and his dreams. Joseph starts telling them about what is basically prophecy. Joseph's having these dreams of God prophesying, this is what's going to happen to you in the future. And Joseph starts telling them, look, I had this dream about how you are all going to be bowing down to me. Well, that's not going to go over well. So here they're jealous of him, not because just because of the love that his dad has for him and the attention that he's getting, but now they're jealous of the fact that he says that God's prophesying that he's going to be great someday. And so the anger and the hatred starts to build and build over time, as one thing after another builds up and festers in their mind until they get their opportunity. Here, Jacob sends Joseph off and says, why don't you go check on your brothers? They're out in the field. Why don't you go check and see how they're doing? And then here's the brothers. They're out there with their sheep, and they see their brother coming. And the hour is theirs. This is their opportunity. With all of this hatred and anger that's built up inside of them, now is their chance for vengeance. They're going to destroy him. And so they plot together, and they decide, we're going to kill Joseph, even though he's their own brother. And they would have done that if it had not been for Reuben, who said, no, don't kill your brother. We can't do this. Why don't we just throw him in a pit? Okay, so they throw him in a pit. And then along come some slave traders that are passing by. And the brothers take this opportunity to sell him for silver. And so here's Joseph sold off to Egypt. And you can just think of the relief. We've finally gotten rid of him. As they said when they were plotting together, they said, we'll see what becomes of his dreams. And you can think about that now. They're thinking, these dreams are going to come to nothing now that we've taken him out of the way. He's no longer a part of our life. We don't have to worry about this anymore. There is a little concern about what are we going to tell our father. So they plan this thing where they take his coat and they dip it in blood and they say, your son's been killed by this wild animal. And everybody believes that Joseph is dead. And years pass and they get older and Jacob gets older. And then there's a problem. Then, a couple chapters later, they have an issue. They don't have enough food. There's a famine in the land. And Jacob, the father, tells them, you need to go to Egypt and you need to buy some food down there. I've heard that there's food down in Egypt. There's no food here. And he states it as saying, so that we may live and not die. This is a matter of life and death. We need to go get some food so that we can survive through this famine. And so they go down to Egypt. And they journey down there and they approach this place where they are to buy food. And they go inside and there's this Egyptian standing there. And he is perhaps the most powerful man they've ever seen in their lives. And they bow down before him and ask him if they can buy some food. And he speaks to them through a translator. He says to them, you're spies. Well, what's that about? All of a sudden, he starts accusing them, and he starts talking to them in this angry voice, accusing them how, you're spies, you've come to spy out our land. And they say, no, we're not spies. We came from the land of Canaan, we have a father, and everything's fine. And he continues to accuse them, no, you're spies. And they say, no, we have a father at home. We have a brother. We just came down here to buy some food. We have a father at home. We have a brother at home. We have another brother who's gone. And then the man says, well, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to lock you up in prison, and we're going to find out if this is true or not. And the Egyptian locks them up in prison for 3 days. What happened here? We just came down here to get some food. And now here we are locked up in prison. What did we ever do to deserve this kind of treatment? And then they start thinking. And they start going through their minds and saying, we do deserve this. And they start thinking about, this is God's justice to us. Look at what we did to our brother. Our own brother, we went and we tried to kill him and then we sold him as a slave. And they start thinking in their mind about how guilty they are. And it bothers them more and more. And Reuben says, well, don't you remember how I stood up and said, don't do this to him, but you didn't listen. And now we're suffering the consequences. This guilt that must have been in their minds for year after year after year. Well, then Joseph lets them out of prison. And at that time, the Egyptian says, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep one of you here as a slave, and the rest of you, I'm going to send them, the rest of you back. And you're not going to be able to come back and see my face again until you bring your other brother here as evidence that you're telling me the truth. Oh, no. All right. So they start heading home. One of the brothers is locked up there in prison. And so they, as they're heading home, they get hungry along the way. And they've got all these sacks of grain there. So they open up one of the sacks to get some food out. And when they open it up, they find all this money inside. And it's the money that they had just paid to buy this grain from the Egyptian. How did this happen? And they say, why did God treat us in this way? And they're so concerned. What do we do about this? And then they open up the other sacks, and everybody's received their money back. Well, that's weird. It's this wonderful blessing from God to have this money, but how frightening. We're going to get in trouble for this. Who put this in our sacks? And so they're really scared, but they get back to their father Jacob. And when they get back to Jacob, they talk to him, they tell him about it, and he's so concerned. And especially when they tell him, well, we need to take Benjamin with us. And no, you're not going to do that. And they realize what a terrible situation they're in. Here, they really have no bargaining chips with this Egyptian man. Here, he holds the food. Their life is in his hands. And they've got to find some way to please him enough that he's going to choose to give them that food. And so they argue with Jacob about it, but finally they decide, all right, we're going to go back, and we're going to take Benjamin, because it's our only hope of survival. And so they go back to Egypt. But they take something with them. They take a present for this man. They take a present of the best of the land, is what they say, the best stuff they could possibly find. Well, from what they've seen of this Egyptian, does he really need anything? Not really. He seems fabulously wealthy. But hopefully, with some gift, they could appease him a little bit and ease things over and make things work out. So they go back to Egypt. And when they return to Egypt, they have this problem. They go to Egypt, and they're suddenly told, you're going to eat with me today, is what the Egyptian tells them. And you're invited to my house to eat with me. And they get so scared, and that's this verse that I put on the screen here. They get so scared. Well, why are we eating with this? Why are we eating with this Egyptian? And they're really nervous about it. And so then, here they are in dread and fear, scared to death. What's going to happen as we eat with this Egyptian? Here is he, maybe he's decided to invite us here so that he can make us his slaves. Maybe that's the idea. Maybe once we're all there with our animals and everything, he's going to jump on us and take us away all as slaves. And that sounds kind of familiar. It sounds like kind of what they did to their brother. And so they start getting nervous about that. And then Joseph takes them in. The Egyptian takes them in here, and he starts feeding them this feast. And it's this astonishing feast. As they go in, they're all seated in birth order. And here they are, grown men. How did this man know that we're going to, who's oldest and who's youngest? And so it's very puzzling. And he gives them heaps of food. And they start realizing, this guy knows a lot about us. How does he know so much about who we are? And then they eat and everything. They get the grain, and they're going on their way, and they go back on this journey. And as they're going back, all of a sudden, somebody comes riding towards them. It's this horseman. He starts riding towards them. And when he gets to them, he says, you have stolen my master's silver cup? And they say, well, no, of course we wouldn't do that. There's no way we would have stolen the cup. You can open our sacks. You'll see there's no cup in here. And he says, all right. And so he goes through and he opens all of their sacks. And he discovers the silver cup in Benjamin's sack. And they are terrified. Oh, no. What has happened? Why is this in his sack? And they try to argue with him. They say, well, we will all be your slaves. And he says, no, the punishment is going to be, I'm going to bring this Benjamin back, and he is going to be the slave, and the rest of you can go free. Well, they all go back with Benjamin, and they go up to the Egyptian. And then they talk to him, and they say, how can we justify ourselves? There's nothing we can say at this point. You found us guilty. Now, that surprises me. You'd think they would say something like, well, this was planted in our sacks. We were framed. But it's not what they say. They say, we are guilty. Look at what, there's nothing we can do here. Just please have mercy on us. In verse 16 of Genesis 44, let's read that verse. Genesis 44, verse 16. So Judah said, what can we say to my Lord? What can we speak? And how can we justify ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Behold, we are my Lord's slaves, both we and the one in whose possession the cup has been found. Saying there's nothing we can do about it. Here we are. We are your slaves. Talk about a change of heart. After selling their brother as a slave, now they're saying, we're guilty. Make us slaves. And you can just think of the guilt in their minds. They know they didn't steal that cup, but they know that they sold their brother as a slave, and they know that that's what they deserve, is to be slaves themselves. And it's at that time that the Egyptian breaks down and begins to weep. And then he says, I am Joseph. Whoa. He reveals who he is. And you just think about the things that are going through their mind at that point. It says they couldn't say anything to him. That's all we get about their emotions at that time. But you think about the thoughts that must have been going through their minds as Joseph reveals himself, and they're thinking, how could he be here? We sold him as a slave. How could he be this great, powerful guy? And then connecting the dots more and thinking, if we sold him as a slave and now he's here, we're entirely at his mercy. Here he is, this great, powerful man. If they were scared before, whoa. They are completely under his power. But then Joseph starts talking, and he explains the whole situation about how you meant this for evil and how, look at what God did in this great situation. And then it says he hugged them and kissed all of them. After all that he had been through, here he kisses them. And you can just think of the relief that they must have had as their brother hugs and kisses each of them, to know that it's all okay. And then he sends them back and he says, all right, I want you to go back and I want you to bring your father, and you're all going to live with me, and I'm going to provide for you, and I'm going to take care of you, and everything is going to be fine now. And just how impressed they must have been, how shocked they must have been at the forgiveness of their brother. And then jumping all the way to the end of the book, let's turn all the way to Genesis chapter 50. After they've lived there for a long time with their brother, then finally their father dies, and suddenly they get scared, and they think, well, what's going to happen now? Now that our father's died, maybe Joseph is going to be angry with us. And Genesis chapter 50, verse 15, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong which we did to him? So they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father charged before he died, saying, thus you shall say to Joseph, please forgive, I beg you, the transgression of your brothers and their sin, for they did you wrong. And now please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. And then his brothers also came, and they fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. But Joseph said to them, do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. So therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. So he comforted them, and he spoke kindly to them. After all this, to have Joseph say, I forgive you. You meant evil against me, but God meant this for good, to preserve many alive. Here, they were on the verge of death. If Joseph wasn't there to help them, they would have starved. And Joseph says, here, I was sent here to give you life. And they're saying, we don't deserve this. We're your servants. Please forgive us. And Joseph doesn't stop with just forgiving them. He provides for them. He gives them a place to live with him. And he takes care of them, and they live this fabulously wealthy life there in Egypt with Joseph. The love and the forgiveness of that incident. Well, that's a great story for us to look at. And it's exciting to see that love and forgiveness that Joseph has, to see that through the brothers' eyes and to feel what they felt. But there's a point that I want to get out of this. When you see that picture and you put yourself into the brothers' shoes and you think about how they felt as they were forgiven by Joseph, I think there is a modern-day thing that we should be feeling, something we should remember from our own lives that is so similar to this. And what I want to suggest is that Joseph is a shadow of Jesus. That Joseph's forgiveness there, as he forgave his brothers, is a picture of how Jesus forgave us. When Joseph forgave them and he welcomed them into his house, that is a picture of Jesus and his love for us. And I want to expand on that and see what that really means. Let's look at the comparison between Jesus and Joseph, and I want to see the striking similarities here. Jumping all the way back to the beginning here of this story, both Joseph and Jesus were the beloved sons of their father. Here you have Jesus with God saying, here's my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. And here you have Joseph being the son that Jacob loved so much and did all these things for. And then you have both of them were prophesied to be this great king. Here, Joseph was prophesied through the dreams that he was going to be this great king that everyone would be bowing down to. And then, of course, Jesus, through all of the Old Testament, is prophesied again and again of how he's going to be exalted. Then you have both of them being sent out by their father. How Joseph was sent out by his dad to go check on his brothers. You remember when they were out in the field. And, of course, Jesus was sent down to this earth to his people. Both of them were rejected by their own people. Here you have Joseph being rejected by his brothers, and Jesus, of course, being rejected by the Jews and killed. Both of them were killed out of envy. Joseph wasn't physically killed, but he was right on the edge of that as the brothers plotted together to kill him. And in both cases, it was motivated by envy. We read about the Pharisees being jealous and envious of Jesus and wanting to kill him for that reason. And it's the exact same reason that the brothers want to kill him. Here you have both of them being sold for silver. Judas selling Jesus, the brothers selling Joseph to the slave traders. Both of them were considered dead and then they came back to life. Here you have Jacob thinking that Joseph is dead for all this time, and then discovering that he's actually alive. Jesus dying and then being raised again. Both of them endured temptation. We didn't talk about that, but Joseph, throughout his whole life, he endured all sorts of temptation, and he was strong through it. When you look at the characters in Genesis, most of them have very, very blatant flaws, very obvious problems with them. But Joseph is held up as almost this ideal. We know very little of, if anything, that he did wrong. I'm sure he did sin. But the way that his story is told is in this great light, where when he was presented with temptation, he was strong through it. You have the great story of when he resisted the temptation of Potiphar's wife, and he stood strong through that. And then, of course, Jesus being strong through all of the temptation that the devil sent to him and never sinning through his whole life. Then you have both of them fulfilling God's plan. Jesus, of course, fulfilling God's plan from eternity. And then Joseph fulfilling this plan of God had this plan to rescue everyone, to save everyone's lives. And he put it in action in Joseph's life even from when he was very young. Both of them were exalted. Here you have Joseph is exalted to this throne and his brothers are bowing down to him. And of course, Jesus was exalted in heaven and is exalted today. Both of them were the Savior of the world. Jesus, of course, being the Savior of everyone. And then Joseph being the Savior of the known world at that time as everyone came to him and he provided food for them. And then another way of saying that, both of them provided life for all. Here, Joseph provided the bread that would give them life so that everyone could live. And Jesus, of course, dying so that everyone could have life through him. What incredible parallels. To me, it's almost eerie to see that kind of a comparison, to see those things connected so much. You really see the finger of God in crafting this history throughout time to put these, Joseph is such a shadow of who Jesus is. But what I really want to emphasize about this is this final aspect of the way that he welcomed his brothers back. The fact that they did not deserve any of this, and yet Joseph was willing to bestow grace on them. And so I want to suggest that this is a story about grace. When you look at it as a comparison to Jesus, and when you look at it as this through the brothers' eyes, you see that this is a story of grace. The brothers did not do anything to earn or buy this salvation from Joseph. You think, well, they took money and they gave him money to buy the food. Well, what happened to their money? Every time they gave him money, he returned it in their sacks. They didn't pay him anything to get that food. Well, they had that present. You remember how they got the very best of the land, the best stuff that they could find to offer, and they gave it to him. But you know what? Did that present really mean anything to Joseph? With all of his extreme wealth in Egypt, even the brothers had to realize that this present is totally inadequate for who this man is. They had nothing to offer. And then when they thought of their guilt, they felt like, we deserve to be your slaves. The only thing they had was a plea for mercy. Everything else was a gift from Joseph. And you think about that with us, how we stand before Jesus. And as we fall on our knees before Jesus, just like those brothers did, we have nothing to offer. There's nothing that we can give to Jesus that would buy our life. But it's through his grace that he gives that to us. And it's because he loved us so much that he is willing to forgive us, just like Joseph forgave his brothers. It's a beautiful picture of grace. As Ephesians 2, verse 4 says, "But God, being rich in mercy, because of the great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved, and raised us up with him, and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus, so that in the coming ages he might show the immeasurable riches of his grace in kindness towards us in Christ Jesus. For by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not of your own doing. It is the gift of God." This was a gift of Joseph to them, that he not only forgave them, but he took care of them, and he welcomed them into his home. And that's a picture of God's love for us. That is a picture of grace. So I hope we can appreciate that grace from this story. But there's one more thing. If this story alone doesn't stir us to understand that grace, God put in one more story about Joseph that I think even more clearly points to that grace and points to our condition to God. And that story is Genesis chapter 47. Genesis 47. This story is very obscure. It's usually one that you don't think about or read that much when you're studying the story of Joseph. This is after all the brothers have already come to Egypt. But the famine is still going on. And at this point, the Egyptians are coming and they're still paying money to Joseph to buy their food. And the people all around the world are still coming and buying food from Joseph. And it gets to a point where they realize we're about out of money, and the famine's still going on, until finally they are out of money, and they're completely out. And so they come to Joseph, and they fall at his feet, and these are the Egyptians here, the people of the land, and they say, "We can't do anything. We don't have any money left. Please be merciful to us and just give us some food." And so Joseph says, "Well, why don't you give me your livestock?" So they give paying their with their livestock, and so then he gives them some more food, and they come back a little bit later, and they say, "Okay, we've eaten all that. At this point, all we have is ourselves and our land. Here, we're going to give you ourselves as slaves. Please just give us some food." And Joseph does. And you think about that picture, how the Egyptians are coming and they're saying, "We can't afford what you have to offer for us. We need this food or we're going to die. And we can't pay for it. We've given you our money, we've given you our animals, and we know that's not enough. The only thing we have left is ourselves. And so we're going to give you ourselves as slaves." Now think about that as us. As we come before God, and we say, we need salvation. We know that we have no hope here. We know that we're destined for death. We need your salvation. And we don't have anything to give you. Here, we're going to give you the only thing that we can. We're going to give you ourselves. We're going to give you ourselves as slaves. We will live our lives 100%. For you, but please give us life. That's a picture of salvation, and that is the attitude that we need to have when we come before God. We have nothing to offer, but we need to give God everything. We need to give him ourselves in full service to him every day, giving him everything that we can, because he has given us life. If you're not yet a Christian, then please be baptized. Receive that forgiveness and that life. Give God everything, because God has given everything to you. Please come forward as we stand and sing.